We must also be honest that in some situations, we will invest in places that are strategically critical, but where we are not guaranteed success. In countries that are incubators of extremism, like Yemen, or ravaged by poverty and natural disasters like Haiti, the odds are long, but the cost of doing nothing is potentially far greater.
That's Secretary of State Hillary Clinton in a speech yesterday where she talked about her new vision for international development efforts. We're joined now by New York Times columnist Nick Kristof. He's been reporting on international development for years. He's also co-author of Half the Sky, Turning Oppression into Opportunity for Women Worldwide. Good morning, Nick.
Good morning.
So when Hillary Clinton talks about investing in places that are strategically critical, we've done that in other places where we've been fighting extremism and terrorism. That's Iraq and Afghanistan, and I guess possibly they're going to use this in Yemen. But tell me exactly what we mean. When we say investing in development in these countries, what are we talking about? Are we talking about building roads?
Well, it's frankly a little unclear right now exactly what she does mean, and we've taken a lot of different approaches. One approach has been to work with aid workers closely allied to military folks in these things called provincial reconstruction teams, where they go out, and it tends to be quite controversial because it does involve the military in these development efforts. And the other approach that we've taken that I think has been, frankly, much more effective has been to simply support local projects. In Afghanistan, there's a wonderful program that helps local communities build an irrigation program, a school, things like that, and support things like education, which I think are utterly transformative in a way that dropping bombs often isn't.
Well, you've outlined kind of the problem with a lot of international development efforts in these areas, and that is that even if it's aid that's coming from an NGO, a non-governmental organization, very often on the ground, people see them as being linked to the military, and they suspect anything that's linked to the military, even if it's a development effort. So how do you get around that?
Well, there's been a, within the aid world, there's been a deep suspicion of these efforts to involve the military in these kinds of programs. Frankly, my own view is I'm a little more sympathetic to it simply because the military has the money. I mean, at the end of the day, the Pentagon spends more on its military bands than the entire State Department has for all of its diplomats. And so given that the military, if the military isn't involved in digging wells or building clinics, then those clinics are not going to be built and the wells aren't going to be dug. So I'm a little more sympathetic to the argument that, bring them in. But yes, there are real concerns about whether that does taint aid work in an area.
But isn't that exactly the argument that people in places like Iraq and Afghanistan make to themselves? They see that the U.S. investment is overwhelmingly military and not in the development side. And so, in a sense, until we reverse the investments and really upgrade what we're doing on the State Department side, people aren't going to take us seriously.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, where there have been some real efforts on the humanitarian side, they really have had a significant effect. And I'm thinking, for example, of the effort by the U.S. to help after the Kashmir earthquake. That had an astounding impact on Pakistani public opinion, but it was temporary. It lasted about a year or so. But
But that's a year. I mean, in terms of Pakistani time and the view of the U.S. in Pakistan, that's a big deal.
That's right. And there are no silver bullets here. And we've invested very heavily on the military side in Pakistan, which is, maybe the most crucial country in the world right now, really teetering on the edge. We spent about $13 billion since 9/11, mostly supporting the Pakistani military. And it's accomplished essentially nothing. And in the meantime, if we had invested some share of that in education, then there, wouldn't have brought any immediate results. It's not a quick fix. But by now, you would really begin to see some real changes in Pakistan, especially in those tribal areas, that I think would have tended to bring a little more stability.
And Nick Kristof, we're hearing this argument on a number of different levels. We just had the criticism of the CIA that they supposedly were too focused on the enemy and not focused on the Afghan people, and that's brought some problems for the intelligence agency. Is that more of the same kind of problem?
I think so. Likewise, when we do aid, you also tend to have these big, huge programs that are, planned from afar. and less of these small-scale efforts that really involve local people. And I mean, in Afghanistan, I'm thinking about something called the National Solidarity Program, which is one of the few programs in Afghanistan that is really widely regarded as a great success. And the end of it, it involves only about $50,000 a project. The local community is involved in committing their sweat equity, sometimes their local materials, in building something like a school, and involved in the decision making. And it really has had a remarkable effect, and including in building support for the U.S. And in addition, since the local people have helped build something, they resist when the Taliban come along to try to blow it up.
Are we seeing also, though, in Iraq and Afghanistan particularly, and I'm thinking of this bombing last week, that the Taliban and al-Qaeda are maybe targeting some of these civilian operations as a way of really discrediting the whole hearts and minds operation and resisting the ability of people to recruit civilians into these programs?
That's certainly true, and we've seen that in Pakistan as well. But it tends to go for these, they tend to target these larger programs that individual, local people, local communities don't really feel a strong sense of ownership in, a strong stake in. In contrast, the Taliban largely leaves alone these small-scale initiatives in which the local community has help build it, simply because that would antagonize the community, and often the Taliban come in part from that village itself. So those have been largely immune, and I think we can learn something from that.
That's real success is a cover. That's a fabulous takeaway. If you're having real success, the Taliban leaves you alone because they know the people love the program.
Yeah, and, you know, education, I think, is another example of that. The schools that have been built in Afghanistan by CARE, for example, or by Greg Mortensen, those have not been blown up. Those are still operating.
Wow.
And that's because the local community, they think of them as their schools. There may be some U.S. fingerprints on them, but they're pretty distant. And that's really what can be done in these places, and it does contribute to stability.
Wow, now that's great. Nicholas Kristof, columnist for The New York Times, co-author of Half the Sky, Turning Oppression into Opportunity for Women Worldwide. Thanks so much. Coming up, we welcome new listeners in Denver by talking with their mayor, John Hickenlooper. And we had our conversation was abruptly interrupted.
Oh, I hate it when that happens.
Find out who interrupted our discussion later this hour.